Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
We need a chair who can not only take the fight to Donald Trump, we also need a chair who can lead turnaround and change the culture of the Democratic Party and the DNC.
The new head of the Democratic National Committee, Tom Perez, elected Saturday afternoon.
Because if we want to take back the House of Representatives, we got to take back state houses.
That's right. That's
we got to take back governor's mansions. We also have to make sure that we're working together on the issue of internal culture change.
And in a show of unity between the so-called Hillary and Bernie wings of the party, Perez immediately chose his main Bernie wing rival, Keith Ellison, as his vice chair, and Ellison responded in kind.
If they trust me, they need to come on and trust Tom Perez as well.
With me now is the former DNC chairman, former governor of Vermont, and presidential candidate, Howard Dean. Governor, thanks for doing this. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks for having me on.
How do you see the role of the party itself in opposing the Trump agenda and the challenge ahead for Tom Perez?
Well, the real role of the party is not so much to challenge the Trump agenda. There'll be plenty of people doing that. The real role of the party is to get us organized. Our problem is that our best voting group in terms of age is under 35, and they're not interested in institutions, including the Democratic Party. They put over the top Barack Obama twice, and Hillary Clinton, well, they didn't put her over the top. They gave her 58% of their votes. They don't vote in the off-year elections. They don't vote in the down-ballot elections. They don't consider themselves Democrats, and they don't particularly like organized politics. That's the real challenge. So I think Tom is a good person. I don't know him well, and I supported Pete Buttigieg, and then when he dropped out, I supported Ellison, who I do know and I like a lot. But I think Tom comes well recommended, and he's got a great resume in terms of fighting for people's rights and so forth and so on. The problem is the institutionalization of the Democratic Party inside the Beltway is much worse than it was even when I got there. And he was put in by the people inside the Beltway, so he's going to have to tell his folks, no, Senator Schumer, you can't have money. No, Nancy Pelosi, you can't have money. That money goes out into the rest of the country to get ourselves organized.
As you see it, are there meaningful Hillary and Bernie wings of the party, or is that more of a media confection?
Well, I think at this point it's a media thing. Tom's credentials are fine, and you know, if the insider, he is the establishment candidate because they embraced him, but he should be fine. I mean, that way, I have no problems, and I don't think Keith has any problems with him either. He's ideologically he should be fine to unify the party. Labor likes him. He's got a long history. He's first Latino chair of the party, which is, I think, a good thing in a party that depends heavily on Latino votes. We got 70% and up last time. So that way, I don't really think there's much of a Bernie versus Hillary. I mean, you know, much was made of booing in the back. 9 people booed. I mean, that was kind of an annoying, you know, reporting by the media that was booing and all this stuff. Yeah, okay, technically there was, but it was 9 people out of 500, so that's not much of a boo.
And Perez's press in the past was that he was from the progressive wing of the Democratic Party. That's why Obama picked him for labor secretary. That's why he used to head the civil rights division at the Justice Department.
Yeah, that's right. I think you'd be hard-pressed not to say that Tom Perez was not a progressive. I think he is. The question is now, can the institutional Democratic Party understand that they are essentially right now irrelevant in most of the rest of the country? That's what they have. They have to go out and they have to strengthen the state party. They not only have to do a 50-state strategy, they have to do a 50-year strategy, because the young people that are voting for them in these huge numbers, when we have a presidential candidate, they need to be motivated, and they need to consider this institution is important, and that there's going to be a tremendous amount of work that has to go into that.
Perez said in the clip that we played that the party needs to start taking back local offices as much as focus on Washington. You agree with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that was the core of the 50-state strategy when I took over in 2005, and it was abandoned. And I don't blame Obama for this, because every president turns the DNC into their reelect, which is what Obama did and Clinton did and Carter did. So, but, you know, that damage is the party. And the damage we've sustained is the worst damage we've ever sustained over an eight-year period. 937 legislative seats lost, 11 Senate seats lost, I think eight or nine governorships lost. I mean, we really, really, 63 House seats lost. So we're in a deep hole.
If the Democratic message is right, why do you think the party has taken such a drubbing at both the state and local as well as national levels?
Because we're not organized in the periphery, first of all, and the new generation of – I don't think people understand how to communicate with millennials. Obama did a fantastic job. He ran the two best campaigns I've ever seen anybody run, Democrat or Republican, in this country. But that's partly because they were incredibly well organized with that generation, and the generation was inspired by Barack Obama, who saw him as one of them, the first multicultural president, and they're the first multicultural generation. You know, these folks don't run things the way we do. And this is the first time in history that when these young people finally do join institutions, they're going to join them on their terms, not ours. And I think there's very little understanding of that. You know, Washington has always been a Washington-centric place anyway. And for that, they have to understand that these voters are not going to vote for us unless we listen to them. And we haven't. And so they've taken matters into their own hands. In the airports, in the Women's March, and the town meetings. That's all. None of that is fueled from inside Washington. It all is coming from outside. We've got to harness that. We can't harness it on our terms. We have to harness it on their terms.
Former Vermont governor and former DNC chair Howard Dean with us here on WNYC. Part of the Steve Bannon playbook, as I understand it, is to provoke Democrats and other progressives into overreacting and then looking worse than the provocative things he's doing. Do you think the party risks overreacting by being the same party of no the Republicans were to President Obama or in any other way?
Absolutely not. We have to stick to our values. And if Trump, by some miracle, actually does something that's good for the country, I think you'll see some Democratic support. But his record is actually significantly worse than I thought it was going to be. I had no conception that he was going to put somebody in charge of the EPA that had conflicts of interest with the oil business. I mean, I did not expect, and I think this is Pence's doing because he's so far to the right. I'm just actually shocked by the government he's put together, and I think it's going to be hard to find common ground. You can never find common ground with a president for the sake of finding common ground with a president. And we should stand up for our values. That's what's important. If it happens to coincide with something that Trump does, that's fine. So far, there's no indication whatsoever that his values are anything close to where the American people's values are.
Well, the test might come in proposals like infrastructure or saving Medicare and Social Security from cuts, which is being reported that Trump wants today, where it might take a coalition of the White House and Democrats in Congress and then a minority of the Republicans in Congress who are more conservative on those spending issues. And that's where Democrats might face a decision. Well, do we just say no to never give Trump a vote so he doesn't get reelected in 2020? Or do we go along with things that might benefit our constituents?
I think the repulsiveness of what the Republicans did in the last 8 years was to put their party before their country. I do not think you'll see the Democrats doing that.
Bannon's game plan is to replace the left-right debate in this country with a nationalist versus globalist debate. I think he really believes that. Do you think that paradigm is more relevant to the struggles of Americans today, and do the Democrats need to organize around a side of that?
Nationalism is looking backwards, and all these pseudo-intellectual theorists that he's put in there. I mean, for God's sakes, Bannon was essentially a neo-Nazi before he got this job. He's a white supremacist, doesn't like Jews, writing all this right-wing crazy stuff from Breitbart. He was in charge of that magazine. So, I mean, to take him seriously is ludicrous. Can you incite nationalism in the United States? Yes, you certainly can. Globalism has made the world safer. Now, if globalism had been executed better, it wouldn't have left behind all those people who then decided to vote for people like Trump and Brexit and Marine Le Pen and all this stuff. So the problem with globalism is not everybody's been included, and that's a major problem. And I think those of us who are globalists are responsible for fixing that, with hopefully an assist of people wanting to help themselves. This notion of globalism versus nationalism, those are academic terms that the average person is not going to fuss over in the bar. What they want to know is, are they going to get a decent job? Do they have opportunity that they used to have and they don't have now? That's the issue that we've got to take on.
The presidential election was so close, a sliver of the vote in those four Rust Belt states, and it would have gone the other way. Do you say the goal or a goal has to be to get back just enough voters in those Rust Belt counties where maybe Obama won but Clinton lost?
I think the goal has to be to motivate young people to come out in greater numbers, and we're going to win every election for the foreseeable future up and down the ballot. And that's a big task. I don't believe... First of all, I don't believe that we ought to focus on particular states. I think you ought to focus on every state, some more than others, of course. But, you know, we could win back Utah someday. I mean, Utah used to have Democratic senators and Democratic governors. But if you don't start today, you're not going to get there in 15 or 20 years. What happens in politics is everybody thinks short term. So they think, oh, let's see if we can go into Arizona and get them. Well, if you want to get into Arizona, we're going to start now and build up the Arizona Party and build up what they're doing. I mean, there's plenty of actually room for us. Arizona voted for public financing of campaigns before the Supreme Court overturned it, under the Bush administration. So, you know, we can do these things, but there's got to be some long-term thinking, and there's very little long-term thinking in Washington.
A common critique is that the Clinton campaign ran too one-pointedly against Trump and not enough for a positive vision that she could have articulated. Do you share that critique?
Yeah, sure. I mean, there's plenty of critiques. I worked very hard for Hillary Clinton. I've known her for 25 years. I think she would have been a really, truly great president. She's not a truly great campaigner. So, you know, you pick up 5 zillion things we could have, should have done differently. And I wasn't in Brooklyn. I don't know why they chose to do what they did. I'm loath to criticize campaigns looking in the retrospectoscope, because the retrospectoscope is always correct. But I've been in the chair when you've had to make those tough decisions. Sometimes you make them right and sometimes you don't.
What is the positive message? Because even in the coverage I saw of the DNC convention over the weekend, I mostly heard Trump is an outrage and the Democrats are bringing people together. But that's not necessarily a new vision for the middle class or anything.
I think the new vision is wake up. You can't trust the Republicans with your jobs or your money. We have a positive vision. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to invest in places that beat us. We're going to invest in Kentucky. We're going to invest in West Virginia. I'm not talking about political investment. I'm talking about we're going to change the tax code. So instead of people on Wall Street making lots of money because they're trading derivatives around and interest rate swaps and all this crap that turns it into a gambling casino, we're going to invest in real things that create jobs in places that there are no jobs. Upstate New York is a perfect example of that. And the Democratic Party needs to understand this is where Bernie Sanders is so valuable. Bernie's message is in some ways sort of orthodox from the 50s and 60s, orthodox left. But the truth is, there's a lot of right in that. I don't agree with everything he says, and I don't agree with his sort of class analysis of everything because I think it's too complicated. But I do agree with the fundamental message is that this system is not fair to a lot of people who work very hard, who live particularly now in rural areas, or people who live in cities. What I don't want to do is have an appeal to the so-called white working class. I want an appeal to all the working class. So there's a lot of stuff we've got to do. But, you know, honestly, Brian, it's not our message that's the big problem. Our big problem is we don't actually do it, and we're not actually in those states practicing it. We're just giving big speeches, and that has to change.
We're just about out of time. How do you see your own role going forward?
I'll do something behind the scenes. I adore this young generation, what I call the first global generation. They are not perfect, nor is anybody, but they're the ones that are doing all that. They've done more to shine the light on who Donald Trump really is, along with the press corps, I might add, which has been pretty maligned by Trump, but it was really finally doing their job. I wish they'd only done it 15 months ago. I'm pretty optimistic about the future of the country, and I think the future of the country and the future of the Democratic Party lies in the same age group, which is people under 35.
Howard Dean, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, stay with us.